and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall. Instagram is @RedRock_BBall. Facebook.com/RedRockBasketball. And also email is RedRockFantasyBasketball@gmail.com. Before we get into today's podcast, just wanted to let you guys know to look out for the Red Rock YouTube channel, where I am going to be posting some short videos accompanying podcasts. So make sure you head across there, subscribe to the YouTube channel, like the videos, comment, whatever. It's just another way that you can get extra content from me on basketball-related matters. It's not going to be duplicates of what's on the podcast. It'll be different stuff that I'll be recording separately, a little bit of crossover, but just short 4-3 minute videos, and hopefully provides a little bit. So let me know what you guys think. I'm still getting used to doing the whole YouTube thing, but I think it will grow with time and things will become better. Now, we're here to do another one in the Season in Review podcast series. Today, we're tackling the Sacramento Kings. Now, I use that particular clip because basically the Sacramento Kings have been a whole lot of nothing for a fairly long time, but not necessarily from a fantasy perspective. Their fan base is definitely crying out for some playoff action. Don't know if that's coming anytime soon, but for fantasy purposes, there's a lot to digest from this team. Let's start with their point guard situation. Now, controversially, in the offseason, the Kings, they let go Isaiah Thomas, who was a star last year. He was almost a top 20 player. He carried this team for long stretches, big scorer, great fantasy option for a guy who drafted very, very late, especially after the Kings brought in Gravis Vasquez at the start of last season and thought there was going to be minute split. Well, Vasquez was actually the starter until he got shipped out to Toronto in the Rudy Gay deal. Thomas was a massive, massive surprise. Then they let him go in free agency. A lot of outcry there. And they brought in Darren Collison, which I was definitely one of those people who thought this is a huge downgrade to get Collison in. Collison has been a guy who's been great as Chris Paul's backup, not so good in really any other situation. And he was having to go again as a starter, which he did in Indiana and he did in Dallas, but not to great success. I say great success, my head just goes Borat, and I'm not going to do the impression, but that's what my head's looking at. He had great success, not to great success in Indiana and Dallas. In Sacramento, lots of great success. 16 points a game for Darren Collison, 1.3 threes, 5.6 assists, 3.2 rebounds, 1.5 steals, 47% shooter, and 79 from the line. He was absolutely fantastic. Head-to-head per game, he was the 39th ranked player. Huge bargain wherever you drafted him, much like Isaiah Thomas the year before. But then he went down with that injury that obviously ended his season prematurely and left the Kings struggling. It wasn't just his injury that left the Kings struggling. A lot of things, which we'll get to a little bit later, but they started off the season really, really well, and a lot of that was to do with Collison's play before he went down with that hip injury. They started off well, then a lot of things transpired. DeMarcus Cousins' illness, the inexplicable firing of their coach, a lot of things just not making sense with this franchise. But Collison, he was great. Like, there's no two ways about it. Those numbers are fantastic. To be a top 50 player per game, a top 40 player per game, nobody could have realistically predicted that. He was in a great situation. He signed for 2 more years at $5 million only per season, which is a significant bargain. I don't think there's any reason to doubt Collison putting up similar numbers again next season. I think that he's going to be a guy that, look, people might not be looking at him in the top 50. I think that you get him in the top 60. That'll be the draft area for Collison. I reckon that's pretty good value because we saw what he could do, and he's going to have another year of in a system working with guys like Boogie, working with Rudy Gay. I think that we're going to see more from Darren Collison. He's going to be playing with George Karl, unless George Karl comes in and goes, oh, I don't like Darren Collison, I want to trade him, I want to get someone else, which is always a possibility. But in a George Karl system, I think with more familiarity with his teammates, Darren Collison should be able to equal that ranking next season. So he's not an old player by any stretch, but probably the best season of his career last season before it was cut short with injury. Other point guards on the roster, we had Andre Miller, who's now an unrestricted free agent. He was brought across by George Karl at the trade deadline. a guy who's been with George Karl for a long period of time, and he relies on him as a veteran presence. And when Collison went down, he played a pretty key role. He basically shared the point guard minutes with Ray McCallum. Towards the end of the season, McCallum played more minutes, but Miller was getting quite good assist numbers. He played just 16 minutes a game, 3.5 assists, which translates really well to per 36 numbers. But fantasy-wise, there wasn't that much. Head-to-head value of 213, Roto of 237. He definitely picked it up towards the end of the season when he got more of those minutes. And his per 36 numbers at 146 is okay. I don't think he's about 185 years old, so I don't think we're going to be expecting much from him if he actually plays for a team, if he signs back on with Sacramento. We know there's not much in terms of dynasty value for Andre Miller, but he did play 81 games last season. So durability, definitely not a problem. But he'll likely be the third point guard if he does end back up in Sacramento, and there's nothing really to talk about there. The other guy we can talk about is Ray McCallum, who towards the end of 2013-14, when Isaiah Thomas was out, he was their only point guard, and he was playing 48 minutes a night. He was shooting terribly, but he was putting up big enough numbers where in fantasy playoffs, he was a huge factor. A similar situation came with him this season. He definitely didn't take it on as strongly as what he did in his rookie year, mainly because of the way the coach was handling it. He wasn't getting big minutes. He would play 25 minutes and Miller would play 23 minutes. Now, I said that did sort of change towards the end of the season when they started giving McCallum the 30 minutes a night, and he started being decent. The last 2 weeks, 12.5 points, 4.8 rebounds, 4 assists, almost 2 steals, a 3-pointer a game when he started to get those minutes. So things have definitely looked up, and he has got a bit of a future. Now, he's not going to be a starter for this team, but he'll likely be a 20-minute sort of guy, and deep leagues have to pay attention. Now, talk about those numbers. The last month, he played 31 minutes, so he was getting playing time, but ranked 159th. So definitely not a great fantasy producer. He provided okay numbers, but nothing too exciting. I don't think there's any reason we need to look at Ray McCallum and think, yeah, a huge breakout is coming from him, or he's going to be a guy who, you know, when his rookie contract is up, he's going to be sought after by teams to become starter material or anything like that. He is just he's a serviceable NBA backup. I think that's probably the kindest thing we can say about Ray McCallum. The other player we have to talk about when we look at the Kings' point guard situation is David Stockton, son of John Stockton. Now, they signed him during the season, but they signed him to a 2-year deal, so he is back for next season, which is, it's an odd move, I think. It probably signifies that Miller's not going to be around. We're going to see a Collison, McCallum, Stockton backcourt. I don't think there's much to get too excited with David Stockton. He didn't do much in that short stint that he had. 3 games, 2.7 points, 3 assists, like his dad, getting a lot of assists. But in a situation where one of these guys goes down and he gets 20, 22 minutes a game, he could put up 5 to 6 assists, and deep leagues definitely have to pay attention to that. So David Stockton is someone to look at. Deep, deep dynasty league guys would want to pay attention if they've got an ability to stash guys on the bench. He could become that third point guard, and he can rack up the assists in limited minutes. So just remember that he's there, and he is there for one more season as well. Shooting guards. This was a position of consternation in the offseason after the Kings used pick 7 on Ben McLemore in the 2013 draft. They went ahead and used, I think it was pick 8 on Nick Stauskas, the exact same position. Stauskas struggled. I'll get onto him in a sec. McLemore's the one I really want to touch on here. He was good. Good. I think good is probably the best word to use for Ben McLemore. And you look at his rankings, and I bet so many of you will be surprised to see Ben McLemore total head-to-head value at 93, total roto value 74. That's high. Now, it's bumped up because he played 82 games, so the total value gets bumped. His per-game head-to-head value is 142, which puts him sort of back end of 12-team leagues. But he was okay at times, and he definitely got better as the season went on. Sorry, my voice is going. Post-All-Star, 128. Last month of the season, 95th. That's a 95th in per game, which is similar to what his total value was. He did start to get better. That last month, he averaged 12.9 points. But what he did was he improved his shooting, because the 12.9 points is just slightly above the 12.1 points he averaged during the season. The three-pointers were the same. The rebounds were the same. The steals were slightly up, but he shot 46% instead of 44%. It's a big difference. we looked at what he did over the last 2 weeks. He really ramped it up, but there was injuries there. There was Rudy Gay out, DeMarcus Cousins out. He had to take on a bigger load, but he averaged 16.5 points in the last 8 games, 2 threes, 3.5 rebounds, 2 steals, 48 and 75. So pretty good numbers from Ben McLemore. And I think what we did see is that they preferred him over Stauskas. Mike Malone preferred him over Stauskas. Ty Corbin preferred him over Stauskas. George Karl preferred him over Stauskas. So that bodes well for him. He's going into his third season, which, again, is that season where we see a lot of players take a big step. He's already had big minutes his first 2 years, 27 in his rookie year, 33 in this season. He has yet to miss a game. He's not going to be a guy who fills the box score or anything like that, but we're going to get pretty deep. He hit 1.7 threes a game this year. We could get that again. We could get his scoring up from 12 up to 15 or 16. 3 rebounds, 4 rebounds, 2 assists. He is a pretty decent rebounder. We saw him in Summer League have some big rebounding games. And his steal numbers, he had 0.9 only for the season, but he splits the last 2 months of the season, 1.3. The last month, 1.5. The last 2 weeks, 1.9. He was getting a lot of steals late, and he also improved his shooting a lot as well. So I think that Ben McLemore, I was going to say he's going to be a top 100 player. Look, he was a top 100 player this year in head-to-head total value, but I think in per-game value, he could easily be a top 100 player. Now, I don't think I'm taking him inside. I wouldn't take him inside the top 80. In round 11, I would consider it around that 100, 110 sort of mark. That would be the area, but he shouldn't be going undrafted in 12-team leagues, definitely. And in 10-team leagues, I think there's a little bit. I think he probably should be drafted in all 10-team leagues, but I imagine we've seen a nice trajectory from his career improving from year to year, and I think we see that happen again and again, finish off the season strong, which is always key. And when those guys were out, Gay and Cousins, he was able to step it up and really, you know, be impressive and show what he's able to do when given more of a role, which I think is also another key factor. Stauskas. That was it was an odd pick at the time. It was even odder when we saw the footage come up of Vivek shouting Stauskas and basically seemingly not knowing what he's doing a lot of the time in terms of basketball operations. We've seen that with the decision to fire Mike Malone. Didn't make a huge amount of sense. This drafting, a whole lot what Vivek does, it doesn't make a great deal of sense. Stauskas was not good as a rookie. He played 15 minutes a game, 4.5 points, hit only 0.7 threes, 1.2 rebounds, 0.9 assists, 0.3 steals, 37% shooting, and 32% from three. And that's where he was supposed to be. Yeah, he's the best shooter. He's a great long-range shooter. He never got it going. Even you look at his per 36 numbers, 10 points, 1.5 threes, 3 rebounds, 2 assists. They're not good numbers. He's a rookie. We know that. And his per-game value, 380th. 274 post All-Star, 269 in the last month. And I just don't see the opportunity there for him. He might play, instead of 15 minutes, he might play 20 minutes a night. But McLemore appears to be the guy who is going to be locked in as the starter here and Stauskas as a backup and could easily be part of trade packages as they try to change things around on this team. I don't love him from a dynasty perspective. In 3 or 4 years, we might see something from him, but I just imagine, I think McLemore has more dynasty potential because he's getting the minutes, but also because he's a much stronger rebounder as well, and he can get steals more than what Stauskas will be able to also. So I don't really rate Stauskas as a great fantasy option for next season, definitely, and moving forward. I just don't think there's a lot there that we're going to love. The other shooting guard on this roster, well, he's not really a shooting guard, but he's listed as shooting guard small forward, and that's Omri Caspi, who was definitely surprising this season. He is an unrestricted free agent. He is going to get paid more than the $900,000 he got paid last year. He's going to get a bigger contract now. I think the Kings would love to have him back because he was invaluable. He played behind Rudy Gay, started in place of Rudy Gay when he was injured, played some power forward as well when there was, not when, because basically the whole time that the power forward position was inept, and he was pretty good. I think that's probably the best way of saying what Omri Caspi was able to do. 8.9 points, half a three, 4 rebounds, half a steal, 49 and 73%, and 40% from three. That's pretty good in just 21 minutes a game. I think that we'd have to accept that. And there were times where you had to own him and you had to play him in daily fantasy because he was getting those minutes when Gay was out and he'd produce big numbers. We see what he's able to do in terms of his rankings. per game, 271. That's not that exciting, but the last month when he got more of an opportunity, 99th. Now, he's not going to be the starting small forward for this team. He probably won't be the starting power forward for this team. But deeper leagues, 16-team leagues, I think that there's definite value in Omri Caspi if he does re-sign in Sacramento, even if it's at a higher contract. He was able to produce pretty significantly down the stretch. I don't think we'd go for him in 12-team leagues, but he's always someone we want to keep an eye on in daily league situations or daily games. And also for seasonal leagues as a short-term pickup player. But he got his career back on track after a few disappointing stops, particularly last year in Houston. He definitely got his career back on track and showed that he can be an effective NBA player when given the playing time. On the wing, we have Rudy Gay, who a divisive character before he came to Sacramento. He was one of those guys that analytics hated. He definitely changed a lot of people's opinion. When he's in Sacramento, he looks like a completely different player. His numbers are fantastic. 21 points, over a three a game, 6 rebounds, 3.5 assists, a steal, 46% and 86% from the line. Great numbers from Rudy Gay. Now, his rankings are also, he's a fantastic Roto guy. The 22nd ranked Roto player for the season. His head-to-head value at 47 is good. And he got better as the season went on. 23rd post-All-Star. And 14th in the last month of the season. We look at last month, though. He did play 8 games, so it's not like a completely small sample size, but he stepped it up, averaging 24 points. He was putting in some fantastic, if you can remember back to that time, some fantastic performances. He's a threat for a triple one pretty much every night as well. And I don't see much changing with Rudy Gay in his role and his role going forward. He is going to be a guy that I'd be comfortable taking inside the top 40. You might even be able to get him to slide a little bit. It's a per game. He came in at 40. I imagine that, again, a season with Collison, the new coach, he post-All-Star when Carl was around, the 23rd ranked player. Big numbers, offensive-friendly system. I think that Rudy Gay is going to have a very, very good fantasy season next year. I think there's a lot to be gained from using him or selecting him maybe a little bit higher than some people might expect, because he was superb, and he's definitely sort of shed that image of a selfish ball hog, offensive black hole. He's not that guy anymore. The 3.5 assists is over 3.5 assists. They're really, really good numbers. That sigh is because I'm about to talk about Derek Williams. How do I put this nicely? He has not been good. He is now a restricted free agent. He was paid $6 million last season. I would be shocked if the Kings offer him a qualifying offer. He'll catch on somewhere at probably league minimum salary and not do a huge amount, but he's never been able to really provide anything. He played 20 minutes a game, and this is with a massive hole, a massive opening for the Kings at power forward, and he wasn't able to take advantage of it. Yeah, at times he'd come in and he'd score a lot, but it's not exciting. He's not a guy where I go, there's something there. He was drafted that high for a reason, but it has not panned out. 8.3 points, 2.7 rebounds, 0.7 threes, which is impressive, but 0.7 assists, 0.5 steals, 45 and 68 is his percents. They're not good numbers. He never really... Okay, let's say something positive. What I can say positive about Derek Williams, the last 2 weeks of the season, he played 29 minutes a game. Again, this is under George Karl, 15 points, a three a game, 4 rebounds, over a steal, 48% shooting. They're good numbers. His track record is that he's not going to continue to do that, but he did show a little bit that will mean that he'll get another NBA contract. I think that's the best thing. I don't think he's going to get that that qualifying offer from the Kings. I'd be surprised if he does. Hey, I've been proven wrong a lot of times, but I would be surprised. Per game, he was ranked 398th. Per 36 minutes, 337th. It was just not good. Not even good. Not even close to being good, I think is the best way of putting what he was able to do. Let's transition from him, who played some small forward and some power forward, to the rest of the power forwards. And this is just ugly. It's just disgusting. I had a question come in on Twitter from Midnight Walker, who's on Twitter at KingMidnight60. What should the Kings do about the four, since it's clearly one of the weaknesses of the team? It is the weakness of the team. I don't think there's any way around that. They need someone to play that position. It is the weakness. Williams is not going to step up. Jason Thompson's not the answer. Carl Landry's not the answer, and he's on an extremely bloated contract. They need someone. They need to I reckon they should. Look, they should have done it last year. They should have taken Noah Vonleh with pick 8 instead of Stauskas, because not that Vonleh was any good last year, but at least he sort of filled a need. Now they're picking at pick 6 again. Who are they going to get there? Frank Kaminsky is in play at pick 6. Willie Cauley-Stein's been mentioned. Maybe push DeMarcus out to the 4 and let Cauley-Stein play at the 5, which would help a little bit. But they desperately need help at the power forward position. Now, the guys who were the power forwards there last year, Carl Landry, I mentioned he was a disappointment. 241st ranked player for head-to-head leagues, 297 per game. Just nothing good. He played 17 minutes, 7-4. Nothing else. 52% from the field and 82% from the line, so there's some value there. But he was a really valuable player in Golden State. He suffered injuries his first season in Sacramento, but he did play 70 games this year, just couldn't get it going. And the Kings mucked around at that power forward position, used guys in and out of the lineup, splitting minutes, never giving anyone really a solid run at that position. Jason Thompson was another one of those guys who had some ludicrous performances. He had a 20-20 game at one stage, but overall his numbers are disappointing, as you expect. It's Jason Thompson. 25 minutes a game, 6 points, 6.5 rebounds, 0.7 blocks, 47-62. So not even a percentage helper as well. He's mainly a points and rebounds sort of guy. He played 81 games and he came in as the 182nd ranked player. Didn't pick it up towards the end of the season. Nothing thrived. There's nothing to see with Jason Thompson. What you see is what you get. The Kings would have to be looking to upgrade that front court position, and if anything, his numbers are going to go down as we move forward. The other guys that they got in that position, Eric Moreland, who they signed in the preseason, he suffered an injury, but he is signed for the next 2 seasons. He didn't do anything to really excite me at all in the limited time that he played, the 3 games. He barely got on the court, so it's hard to judge what we can expect from him. But I'd say it's a fair thing to say we're not going to be expecting too much from Eric Moreland moving forward. DeMarcus Cousins, this is the guy for this team clearly, and he was an animal. Head to head value 17th, Roto 14th, because he only played 59 games. He had the issue with the viral meningitis, which cost him a lot of time early on in the season. Then he had that foot injury, which caused him to shut down early on. But his numbers are incredible. 24 points, 12.7 rebounds, 3.6 assists as a big man is fantastic. 1.5 steals, 1.8 blocks, 47-78 as his percentages. Just crazy numbers. And the thing that we look at, okay, head-to-head 17th, Roto 14th, but per game 6th. Post All-Star break, 6th. The last month of the season, he was the number one player in fantasy. In head-to-head fantasy leagues, he was the number one player in the last month. 8 games, 26.3 points, 15.1 rebounds, 5.6 assists, 2.1 steals, 2.8 blocks. Just crazy, crazy numbers. He was the guy you had to own pretty much in every daily fantasy lineup. He was just absolutely killing it until he got shut down with that foot injury. Where do we take DeMarcus Cousins next season? I think DeMarcus Cousins... Okay, so there's obviously going to be a lot of debate about this going into the season. Curry, Harden, Davis, the top 3 guys. Chris Paul. And then you have LeBron, you have Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, DeMarcus Cousins. I think he can be picked anywhere between 5 to 8. I think that's probably... I'm probably missing someone there as I do this off the top of my head, but... DeMarcus Cousins could be picked anywhere from, I think he's outside the top 4, but from 5 to 8, you can easily pick DeMarcus Cousins. As I said, down the stretch, the last month, George Karl is the coach, the number one player in fantasy basketball, head-to-head leagues, number one. Picking him at pick 5, and if he ends up as the number one guy, which would seem ludicrous, but when you see 26-15 with 5.5 assists, over 2 steals, and almost 3 blocks, that's definitely number one potential. That's number one right there. So, there's a lot to like about him. If you picked him at pick 5, I couldn't criticize it at all. If you picked him at pick 4 ahead of Chris Paul, I probably couldn't criticize that either. We just got to hope that there's no Boogie implosion. It doesn't appear. That's maybe a little bit overrated. to be honest, he was pretty good in that respect. Didn't get suspended with Tex. This season sort of reined his game in. Now, whether he gets along with George Karl is another story. We've heard rumors that Karl and him don't necessarily get along, and a lot of trade talks of Cousins maybe going to the Celtics or moving on, which obviously if he moves on, it's a massive coup for any team that gets him. But assuming he stays, you know what, any team he goes to, whatever situation he is in, he's a top 10 player because of how good he is. Does anything happen with Karl? Does that affect anything? I don't think so. I'm very, very he's very, very comfortable taking him in the top 10. He is a clear top 10 player to me based on what he was able to do this season. And the fact that, he is still improving. There's still a little bit to go from what DeMarcus Cousins can give us as fans. The backup center position, not so exciting. Ryan Hollins was the guy who started games when Cousins was out. 3 points, 2 rebounds in 10 minutes a game. That's not all that enthralling. He did shoot 65% from the field, which is okay, but he's an afterthought. He's not worth picking up in standard leagues when Cousins goes down. And the other guy signed right at the end of the season, Sim Buller, the gigantic man, the 7'6", 380 or 50-pound behemoth, played the 3 games, didn't do anything to make me think that, he's going to have any impact in any sort of situation. I can't see him really doing anything. He just looked big, which he is. He looked slow. He didn't look exciting at all. He's not signed for next season currently though, so that remains to be seen whether he gets another go with an NBA team. But he definitely generated a little bit of media with his presence and his size and the fact that he's the first Indian player of Indian descent, even though he was born in Canada. Nothing for us to really focus on in fantasy leagues. We're not going and adding him and going, oh, dynasty leagues, we've got to target Sim Buller. I don't think there's much to really be gained from that. I think you got more value in adding, say, an Eric Morland than Sim Buller. And that's not saying a huge amount. I think that covers the Sacramento Kings. I don't think there's any, you know what? No, there is one player, Reggie Evans, who is probably all-time league leader in nut punches, a rebounding machine. Wasn't as aggressive on the boards this season. 6.4 in 16 minutes, which is still a good return, but offers you nothing else. Can't shoot, can't hit free throws, can't score. He's a rebounding guy. If he gets minutes and you need rebounds, you can add him in and maybe get 10, maybe get 12, and that's what you get from Reggie Evans. There's almost literally nothing else. He is an unrestricted free agent. Remains to be seen whether he comes back or not. But again, with them looking to upgrade that power forward position, I reckon they'll be trying to get someone else in at that position and do something more than what he can do, which is grab 6 rebounds in 16 minutes. Don't forget to follow me on all the social media accounts, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and now YouTube as well. And let me know what you think about the YouTube videos. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.